Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve bring you high-level sports analysis and stories as two dads raising kids. Plus, find out every Tuesday what they hate to see if you agree. That's SV Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcast. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Happy to be here. I got a lot to get in today. There's a lot of stuff happening that I find quite interesting.
Dog, I'm looking at that hoodie. I can't tell if you dressed as an acid mushroom or you took one.
Both. I'm just joking. I ain't got into the mushrooms yet. I'm not that I'm desperate for entertainment in this pandemic just yet. I'm back to no shape up life and I don't like it.
When the Omicron hit, you know, my barber was supposed to come through, but you know, the barbering population, you can't really like be trusted. They verified, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I was like, yo, I'm a chill on that cut. I ain't had one. I guess that was now. Like 2 weeks and change, give or take, since that. I really don't know the next time I'll be willing to have the barber come up in the crib.
I got a good barber for you up there that, like, works on TV and stuff so that he's all covered. But also, like, why? you don't need a haircut that bad.
Yeah. It's not even about, like, being covered, like, full on and all that as much as it's just, like, Omicron is just wiping its keister with these 3 doses that I have received.
He sent me his test because they make him test to go on set all the time. So he sent me his test before he used to come to my hotel room. That was back when I came to New York, which was a month ago. I ain't doing that no more either.
Dog, it was so funny because, you know, I can tell the people this. We got the Back on the Record with Bob Costas coming up. You know, we do a round table hoping to have the homie Dominique Foxworth on there, you know. And I used to be like on all the calls for that, but I'm working on the other show, so I ain't really got time for that. So I had to hit the homie Howard up and be like, yo, y'all might want to call Dominique and talk to him about what the circumstances and situations are that are surrounding this, man, because Omicron is running the game.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, my conversation with Howard was pretty brief. It was like, I don't know, it's a little ways away. We'll see what's happening when it's come. Let me know when the deadline is to let you know. Because like, I want to do it. I want to be up there. I want to be on HBO, but I also got a good streak going since this pandemic started of not catching it. And I would like to keep that thing going.
Yeah, let me tell you what my brother said about not catching it. That is a great, great observation on this, right? So my brother has torn his ACL 3 times, right? And so they tell you that basically once that's happened, at some point, you're going to have to get you a new knee, right? Like, you just put it through a lot, you're going to have to get a new knee. Okay. He recognizes that at some point, he's going to have to get a new knee. But he's like, the later I wait to get that new knee, the better that knee will be. You would much rather the 2030 model of the new knee than the 2022 model of the new knee. The 2030 one, it's got the rearview mirrors that put the red light on when somebody's in your blind spot. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like that's, you want
to gotta wind the windows no more.
That's what you want. And he's like, I'm doing everything I can to get the newest knee that I could possibly get. And that's kind of how I feel about all this, right? Like, I'm trying to wait until they come around and they're like, oh yeah, cool. Well, go to aisle 4 and get a Cobaquil and you'll be good in the morning.
Yeah, you are damn right. I'm with you. When it finally does become what some people say, like the flu, by then I might get it, but I don't want it before then.
Let me tell you how everybody's like, this is just like the flu. Let me tell you how I know this ain't like the flu. When's the last time that 35% of the country had the flu?
I don't know. I'm sure it was well before the vaccine for the flu was developed.
Yeah, but like when flu season comes around, Like, you hear about flu season, but how many people do you actually meet that have the flu?
I mean, the idea that it's a season, that we've become accustomed to it, is enough. Like,
yes.
Yeah, it's a season. Every year we have flu season and we get vaccines or we don't get vaccines, or and we all mostly are fine with the exception of some older people, but we don't have a flu 2 years. Like, right. This ain't right. The flu.
Well, the other thing about the flu is I feel like the flu been around too long. And when I say I feel like the flu been around too long, what I mean is we be using the flu as a real general term. Yeah, I got some kind of stomach flu. Nah, yeah. It's the flu. Do you have the
influenza?
Flu? Influenza. Right. Like, I forget at what point when I found out that flu was actually short for something. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I mean, we should be throwing that around. You know what I'm saying? That ain't what we doing with COVID. Like, I got some kind of COVID. No, do you have it or not? Let me know. I need to know the particulars.
That is true. That is true. And there are multiple kinds of COVID. So, I mean, it's reasonable that people could say, yeah, I got some kind of COVID. But no, this thing is a monster. I got the COVID. Nobody be talking about 19. Nobody talk about whether it's Omicron or whether it's Delta. It's like, I got the vid.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like there's like Delta and Omicron are like the two versions of like the COVID. I'm very curious, like on the in between, what was Ada hitting on? You know what I'm saying? What were Mu and Nu hitting on?
They weren't hitting on nothing, obviously.
Nah.
They were some suckers.
Yeah, they just rolled out. I'm trying to remember, was it you I was talking about?
Talking to it on the phone?
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, we're like, yo. We terrified of what that Omega gonna be.
Man, I don't care whether Omega is harsh or not. The name is enough to put me back in full quarantine. If I hear something called Omega is out here coming to get me, I'm gone.
Yeah, Omega sound like Y2K, right? Like the computer is not able to scroll back over. Everything is going to shut down when the Omega comes. Like somebody needs to start writing that screenplay right now.
And I'm not going to watch it. I've had enough. I don't need no more COVID content in my life, man. I've read enough articles, watched enough news reports, argued with enough dum-dums. That's not fair. With enough independent thinkers to realize that I am done with all of this COVID, no matter what Greek letter we're on.
Yeah, man. So you don't want no more COVID content, but oh well, we still going to talk about Aaron Rodgers anyway.
Oh, gosh.
Yo, Aaron Rodgers, I did not watch the Manning cast this week, but they had Aaron Rodgers on. And honestly, I was a little surprised that ESPN was willing to put him on live television. Like, I feel like he's a bit of a live wire. There's no telling what direction it was going to go in. They just had the utmost faith in Peyton Manning, where Peyton Manning's like, no, it ain't going to be no drama on my watch, right? Like, they knew them two boring Mannings would probably keep this thing in the road, and that was their move. And so Aaron Rodgers still sat there and pointed out, what was it, a copy of Atlas Shrugged? Right? And I try to be careful when I talk about, like, Atlas Shrugged and all that, because I haven't read it. Like, it is entirely possible that it is the greatest book that has ever been made, and I'm the one that's missing out. But no. The problem is I look at the people who it is that tell me to read it, and I'm like, oh, no. I've read the Cliff's Notes, and I'm like, oh, no. But no matter what you think about the book, that is Aaron Rodgers clearly signaling something to America. Like, he wants to let you know. Atlas Shrugged is one of those texts where that's what it is, right? Yeah. Like, if I had sat, you remember that time when Naomi Osaka put a copy of The Wretched of the Earth on Instagram? That is a signal that is no
real
longer
out
on Instagram.
Here.
It's no longer on Instagram, by the way, but you come out and be like, yo, I'm over here reading The Wretched of the Earth. That is a signal. What Aaron Rodgers dropped, right? Was the signal. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why?
Okay, so Aaron Rodgers is a smart human being. Like, I believe him to be above average intelligence.
Yeah.
Where he directs that intelligence, like, obviously on the football field, it's outstanding. But, like, I don't believe that he is foolish enough to not understand the connotation that comes with citing Ayn Rand in 2021. Or
right.
I guess it was 2022 by then. And to me, it seems like coupling that with most of his other recent things, like it, I don't want to jump to too many conclusions, but it feels like he has made a decision that he wants to be the prince of the right-wing libertarian media infrastructure like post-career or currently in his career. Whatever he was doing before, maybe this is a maturation, but it's not just to me. It doesn't seem like a process of changing the way that he thinks. It doesn't feel like that because like Aaron Rodgers also has been outspoken about issues that I feel like are in contradiction to like his now, which seems like a more libertarian view on society. So like, it seems like you can have that change of heart or mind without repeatedly doing things publicly that feel like signals to a particular part of society that I ain't with them no more. I'm with you and I'm really with you. And when you start saying Ayn Rand was like, I don't know, like the mother or grandmother of libertarianism and like people like Rand Paul out here like that, like, I don't know. How else are we supposed to take that? You decided that you wanted to take a moment. And during your interviews, I don't know. All right, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, but see, to me, what's interesting about that, of course, A, is libertarian means like eight different things to eight different people, maybe even to seven different people, right? So like what people mean when they actually engage in that, you never know. Two, like Rodgers got on the Packers fans about booing for the, like, I think it was the locked arms, you know, and that sort of stuff, which should not be mutually exclusive with whatever your notion of like libertarianism is and stuff. It just seems to be, though, the people that are down for that also are often down for this other wing of stuff, right? Like, I can see how you could put those two things together.
Yeah, I
like,
appreciate you clarifying that.
Yeah, like, maybe there's no change, except most people tend to pick up these issues as a full-on bushel, right? And then take them on. That's why I'm careful about the way I talk about a book I haven't read, because I know that's part of the bushel, and maybe there's room to separate that out. All I want to know is, if Aaron Rodgers got canceled like he said he did, how the hell he on ESPN with a copy of Atlas Shrugged and showing it to people and not canceled before, not canceled after. At least that's as far as I can tell. Wow, he's decided I'm this guy. I'm going to be that guy.
Your precision is appreciated because I'm talking to you the way that I would talk to you because you understand what I mean, what I'm saying. And you understand that a lot of other people are going to listen to this. So your precision is appreciated there. But I think that Aaron is being imprecise when he talks about cancel culture, because I think the people who say cancel culture at this point, they don't believe that they're actually going to get canceled. They're just talking about repercussions, backlash. Like, that's what cancel to them means. Like, oh, the mainstream media, like CNN said I'm silly. Somebody on ESPN called me an anti-vaxxer. Like, that's what they mean. Cancel culture is that the social media like rises against them, because they can't actually mean being canceled.
Well, I think I could make the case that it is actually harder to get canceled now than it used to be. Because we can name examples of people who have, in fact, been canceled, right? Like said something, did something. Colin Kaepernick online won, right? And you could argue he didn't get canceled all the way because he got a Netflix deal and everything else. That is into his career and like livelihood. But like you go back to Ed Asner back in the day and his statements about organized labor and how that ultimately derailed his career. Al Campanis, that man absolutely got canceled. Jimmy the Greek, that man absolutely got canceled. Like, I can name some people that was here one day and gone the next. I mean, not that he shouldn't have been canceled, but Orenthal James Simpson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
John Rocker ultimately got canceled. After a point, it was just like, no, you out of here. Like, you'll find people that'll entertain you as a sideshow, perhaps, or people that want to make some point by having you on. But no, back in the day, that's when people for real got canceled. Paul Robeson, he got canceled.
Yeah, he got canceled. I thought you were making a different point about how it kind of feels impossible to be canceled now, because these like outlets that used to be like obscure,
right?
Them things mainstream now. Like, the numbers that Joe Rogan is doing, the numbers that like some of these other people are doing, the numbers that people who spew these beliefs are doing, like, you can't get canceled. Either you stay within the lines of what we consider to be like reasonable society, and then we'll keep you on all these platforms now, or you cross over and then you go there where you're getting just as much, if not more, viewers. Like, that's the fascinating part, is that so many people who have these kind of unconventional and dangerous in many ways views, like, keep doing this underdog thing. And that was one of the things that was frustrating me about Aaron Rodgers is, like, you're not a victim, dog. Like, this underdog victimization that these people are talking about while they also are doing better numbers than CNN is, like, confusing to me.
You're not entitled to be heard. Like, you have the right to speak.
Yeah.
But you are not entitled to be heard. And I think that's what happens to a lot of people. Because, like, I could make the argument, the counter on the cancel part would be the money that you can make on, like, Substack and Patreon and those kinds of things. Like, I talked to a buddy of mine who's got one going. And I was just curious. I was just like, you know, like, can you live on this? Because that's just what I had never really had a great gauge on. I see all these people doing it, and I don't know the margins. I'm like, can you live on this? And he rattled off the numbers for me. And I was like, oh, okay. You can, like, you know, not only can you live off this, you can live off this and package this with a little bit of other, and you can get some money, but there is going to be a limitation to who your audience is, right? Like, it's going to be some difficulty in how you promote it, and you're not going to probably become ubiquitous off of your newsletter, right? Like, you're going to be serving a micro-level audience, and there's nothing wrong with that. But these people who don't, you know, like the Aaron Rodgerses of the world, they're not satisfied serving a micro-level audience. They feel entitled to be heard and respected by everybody. And that's not how any of this stuff works.
Yeah. I mean, you can't have them both, because it goes back to the line that's attributed to Michael Jordan. I don't know whether he said it or not or was joking or not, but Republicans buy sneakers too. Like, yeah. That, the point of that is, if you want to be a star of a Disney movie, you can't be out here also doing adult films. Like, that's a drastic example, but that's the point. Like, there are certain places where there is, and everybody can understand this, where your behavior, your choices, the things that you can say, forget doing adult film. You can't be out here like doing profiles where you're talking freely and liberally about your sex life, because that is then attached to you, and big companies don't want to attach themselves to that. Like, that seems to, in many of these like capitalist driven political ideologies, you would think that this stuff makes sense to them, but no, it's like, nah, as soon as you do that, no, you guys should be comfortable with being attached to everything I say or do. There are some lines, and I think most of us, we understand that. We've grown accustomed to that.
Yeah, I tell you this, though, I feel like Aaron Rodgers needs to send a thank you card to Hub Arkush of Pro Football Weekly. And for those of you who have not seen this story, Arkush is the, I think he's the executive editor-in-chief. He got one of the big jobs at Pro Football Weekly. I think that's their family business. But anyway, he did a radio interview in Chicago where he said he's not going to vote for Aaron Rodgers as MVP because he's the biggest jerk in the league, and there's no way that you could be the most valuable player on your team while being the biggest jerk. And that got everybody on television, even the people who think Aaron Rodgers is one of the bigger jerks in the world, were all like, yeah, but that's the MVP this year, dog. Like, I hear you. I feel what you talk about, but no, we're not even going there. And so now he could try to make the argument of persecution because one person said this on the radio.
He foretold it, Aaron did, but I think that, again, Hub was inarticulate and wrong, frankly, about Aaron Rodgers, but I do think the idea that the things that you do off the field can impact your MVP candidacy, like, I don't think that's outrageous. Like, Aaron Rodgers is a guy who I've chosen for MVP, and obviously I don't agree with the stuff that he's saying and doing off the field, but it feels like the way that people are playing it is like that's an absurd idea, which, like, and Aaron Rodgers was almost like the perfect example of that because he had to miss a game because of the stuff that he was doing off the field. Like, that's a reasonable argument. We can't have you out there, and we might potentially, they won that game, but we might potentially lose some games because of decisions that you made off the field. Yeah, you can't be the MVP. It's hard to function in the locker room because of the things that you do or say. Yeah, you can't be the MVP. But they the best team in football. Those things weren't a problem. Maybe you don't give them the Walter Payton Man of the Year, but that ain't what this award is about.
Aaron Rodgers is not the wackiest guy in that locker room, and I don't even know who else is in that locker room. I just know that what I've heard from him is not close to being the wackiest thing that you're going to hear. If you have a random sample of 53 people, and the only thing they have in common is that they want to play football and they do it really well, right? There's going to be more wacky than Aaron Rodgers within that sample of 53. I feel very confident saying that.
Oh, yeah. He's been quaffed. He's been a starting quarterback, a first-round pick. So this is the cleaned-up version of the wackiest guy that you could have in that locker room. Yeah, I've been on plenty of teams.
This also brings us to Novak Djokovic. As we speak, is quarantining in Melbourne as he has appealed because he put in for an exemption. And apparently on Monday, this will be settled. He's supposed to play in the Australian Open. And they kept saying that he has an exemption. But what he was really doing was presenting his case for an exemption. But Australia, which doesn't play no games about this, had not made this call for this exemption. And you knew it was going to be some bullshit when he got there. Like, you just knew with this guy and his get down. Because the thing about the exemptions are, if you don't have like a legitimate physical allergy, there's not really a lot of grounds where you can get one. And so where people always figure they can go is, it's my religious beliefs. And see, calling it your religious beliefs rather than something like your spiritual beliefs is key. Because your religious beliefs mean there is a religion. And that means that somebody runs that religion. Meaning that you have to get a letter from whoever is in charge of your religion saying that y'all don't do vaccines. And all I'm saying is the Jehovah's Witnesses won't write you that letter, okay? Like the Jehovah's Witnesses, who are not about blood transfusions and a whole host of other medical situations, look at the vaccine and like, no, that's cool. We'll do that. Right? So there just aren't that many people you can find to get to write this letter. Like, think about this. In all the stuff we've heard about or whatever, how many people have we heard about with a legitimate exemption to get away from getting a vaccine unless it has something to do with, like, being previously infected in the presence of antibodies or something?
I thought that Novak was going after the medical exemption, which maybe I read the wrong article, but either way.
I know, I'm just saying, but, like, he may have been going after it, but I'm saying that even that, it's a limited, there's limitations to your ability to get that. There's limitations to your ability to get a religious one. When people say they're going to have an exemption, we need to be like, yeah, we'll see. Why? Because you might get to the airport and sent back home.
Yeah, that's fine. So like I've been trying to look at it since we've been talking about this for a couple years now. I've been trying to look at it at a bunch of different angles. And like I gave myself the mental exercise of maybe they're right. Like there have been plenty of times in history where the population had bought into something that we come to know was wrong. And in that case, maybe you're out here trying to be a pioneer freedom fighter. This is an act of civil disobedience by Novak Djokovic. Like, that's where I get confused, is when they are shocked that the repercussions come. I don't know. Civil rights, I go back to that a lot because it's one of the few things that I actually cared enough about to learn a little bit. But they was expecting to go to jail. That was the point. They was expecting, not that they should accept it, but they was expecting to get hosed. That was the point. They was expecting dogs to bite them. That was the point, to expose how absurd all this was. So, like, it feels confusing to me that either you are like, I'm not going to get vaccinated, and for that choice, I have to give up some things in my life. Fine, I'm going to stay home. Or I'm not going to get vaccinated. This is wrong, that what is happening to everyone. So I'm going to make a point of this and go and then like use that as a platform. But it just feels selfish to me the way that these, because they're not trying to do that, particularly Aaron Rodgers and Novak Djokovic. They're like trying to get around it and maybe not ruffle any feathers. Like, nah, you out here, we are all sheep who are following this foolish science. Cape up, save us, save us then.
Right. It's the entitlement of it. Like, you believe that you shouldn't have to do this and you get to go do this other thing. Because that was the thing about Kyrie. Say what you want about it, but he stood on it. He was like, nope, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to pretend like I'm doing this. I also believe, though, that Kyrie did, after exhausting every possible way to get around it. But then he was like, no, you know, and he halfway won, I guess, because he's back because they needed him or whatever it was. But with Djokovic and all these other cats, that was the same thing with Aaron Rodgers. Just don't do it. Like, you have to go through, you think it's silly in theater, all the masks and stuff like that. Okay, well, this is just what you got to do. You got to go through it. You got to live that life.
I wear a sport coat on TV. Sometimes I even wear a tie. Like, to talk about grown men throwing a ball around. I do it. It feels to me like a charade. But I do it. It's a minor inconvenience, but because for whatever reason, people at home appreciate it better, they take you more seriously, or the company wants you to do it. Like, it feels like there are so many things in our lives that we do that we think are kind of absurd, but we do because that's what we're supposed to do. And like, it gets me worked up every time we talk about it, because it's just so interesting how we choose, or they in this case, are choosing what parts of society they will trust and accept. And so like, I am fine with challenging convention. I'm fine with that. I'd be willing to jump on board with challenging convention on things that I understand. Like I don't understand this stuff. Like, to be frank with you, I don't fully understand it. So I will be happy to trust the people who seem to fully understand it, not the one or two who disagree with it, who seem to understand it. And that's the confusing thing to me, is like back when we used to go into work, like I go into a building and go to the top floor of a very tall building. I don't need to like do my own architectural analysis. Like I'm fundamentally, I'm trusting a whole lot of people. When the white walk sign comes up, I walk across the street. Fundamentally, I'm trusting all these people. And like, presumably, Aaron Rodgers does these same sort of things. And it's just confusing to me that one of the more complicated things, harder things to understand, this is where you're like, nah, let me find the fringe believers of this. Like, it just is confusing to me. And again, maybe they're right. And maybe 20 years from now, I'll be on the documentary and I will come back and thank Aaron Rodgers for saving us from all of this. But it feels like you're wrong, bro.
Dude, all of this is, by the way, somehow it was such a circus in the offseason with whether he was even going to come back there and everything else. And I feel like we've completely forgotten about that, right? Yeah. Like, it's totally gone there. This is probably his last season in Green Bay, or at least that's the way that he made it out to be, though I think the Packers are in a different boat than they were before, because they don't think they have the quarterback of the future anymore. It's just a matter of whether Rodgers is going to decide he wants to come back there. But what I am very curious about, and where it gets back to like nuts and bolts football, one thing that I have found interesting for all these years about this evolution of the NFL into a passing game, that there's a logical flaw, I think, in a lot of the analytics discussion on this, which is, the regular season sample is largely compiled in weather that does not approximate the weather of the postseason. So the idea that you need to throw the ball around all the time makes great sense until it's snowing and you're throwing around a brick, right? Yeah. And so it's been one of the interesting things about the Packers is they've built this around quarterbacks now for about 30 years, and obviously they've had, you know, varying levels of success. They've also lost a lot of playoff games at home. You're building this around something like your advantage, at least historically, the way people thought about it was that frozen tundra and it's cold and everything else, and you're playing the antithesis of cold weather football. So there is always a chance that the Packers are going to spit the bit, just because I feel like they're not built for their home stadium. They're not, like, best case scenario is to get home field advantage. And then they're going to get in there and play a game that don't necessarily work for playing in that environment. There's a great chance that the Packers season could end with a thud, keeping in mind that the year that they won the Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers, they played all them games on the road.
That's fair. They are not 100% aligned the way that the Colts used to be. We're going to play this in a dome. We're going to throw it all around. We're going to get undersized defensive ends who play with speed, and we are going to win the regular season. And then it don't matter what's happening outside. The conditions in here are the same. I guess A.J. Dillon has kind of developed for them as reasonable offensive alternative to like throwing it all around the lot. But I wish that I could look back at their championship game losses in recent history and say it's because it was the weather. Weather wasn't an issue. Like, didn't they go to San Francisco?
Oh, you know, they've lost a few on the road, too. Don't get me wrong.
No, I'm just saying in general. And last year, it was in Green Bay, but it wasn't even that cold, if I remember correctly. So, like, I get your point, but that ain't even always the problem. It's just a one-game sample. But you're right. You're supposed to play good defense and run the ball in the playoffs in bad weather. But they seem to be inconsistent on defense, and they have some bit of a running attack, and maybe that's also in part because everyone's afraid of Aaron Rodgers. So if you're getting in inclement weather, they may not be dropping two safeties back and having a light box. They might load that box and force Aaron Rodgers to pick them apart through the air in a rainstorm. But yeah, we saw that game in New England versus Buffalo, that Monday night game a few weeks ago. If that happened, oh, they done. they just done if that happens.
Dude, I got no idea who's going to win the Super Bowl whatsoever. Like, I look at all of this and I got no idea. And that's the kind of thing that make you be like, Patriots gonna mess around and steal this.
I refuse to accept it. I refuse.
Same.
Yeah, I refuse Same. To accept it. But you're right. You're right. They could mess around and steal it. Their defense is going to have to play better than it has recently, but they have the ability to do that. But it just doesn't feel like you can win that way consistently. That's why I can't make that leap. And I probably would have said the same thing. No, I wouldn't have, because back when Brady was winning early in his career, yeah, maybe I would have said the same thing. But it feels like football was different back then. There is going to be a time in a playoff run, 3-game, 4-game run, where you need your quarterback to black out. Like, or maybe not even black out, but make several plays. You know, like, you're going to need that to happen. And I don't think Mac got that just yet. No, if he ever going to develop it.
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to take for me to be a believer in that one. I know with Tom Brady, it took a couple Super Bowls, and I was like, okay, I guess I see what you guys are talking about. All right, I see what direction this is going in.
It is funny how we go back through the Brady history, and, like, Brady got great after he had already put a couple Super Bowls in his pocket.
Yes.
And we chalk up those first couple as if, like, he had great plays in there on occasion, but, like, he was all right. But he wasn't the man.
So I watched on YouTube, after John Madden died, somebody recommended listen to the call of the drive in the first Super Bowl where they won it, where John Madden started off like, yo, you need to take it in, right? Just run this clock out and take it in. I mean, he was throwing to nobodies. He was handing it off to J.R. Redman, who wasn't even playing for the majority of the game, all of this. And that wasn't like some wildly impressive drive with a bunch of amazing throws, but it didn't matter. They got down there, they kicked that field goal, and then they went, and a legend was born. But if you actually watch, like, in sum total all of it, there was nothing really necessarily like that impressive. But that defense had a Hall of Famer. Well, Ty Law was on that team, so he's like a Hall of Famer. A couple of like fringe type, like Willie McGinnis is like a fringe Hall of Famer. Teddy Bruschi's not a fringe Hall of Famer, but like a really good player. I think Richard Seymour, I think, was there by then. Like, they had some dudes. I don't feel like their defense is dude loaded this year.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're probably right. Judon can play. J.C. Jackson feels like a magnet for interceptions. But I feel like the last time they had a great defense, Gilmore was like a dude, like really shutting people down. But I feel like that's not who they've been since then, though. Like, I don't really know how many dudes they've had on defense, and they've always played good defense, you know? Maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, I guess Chandler Jones was a dude at some point, but it just doesn't seem like that's the way that they build this.
Nah, like Vince Wilfork was the longest standing dude.
Yeah.
That I feel like they kept in place and in time. No, it's just Bill Belichick's like, I got a big old brain, dog.
Yeah.
I be coming up with all kinds of amazing things every week.
Right. And I think that the market inefficiency, like, this isn't revelatory, but he got veteran guys who are good. Like, he wasn't necessarily going out for veteran guys that are good, smart, don't make mistakes, particularly in the secondary. And he's not going out and getting big time, big money free agent necessarily. I guess, again, Judon might be that example. If you can find a pass rusher like that, you go pay it. But he's getting guys that he can trust and guys that are flexible and guys that he's like, all right, last week we played cover 4 all game. This week we're going to play man all game. If they're in this formation, we got to check to man under. If they're in this formation, if they shift to that, then we're going to go cover 2 with a Tampa drop. Like, that ability to be flexible. And then at halftime, the second half, we're going to do totally different stuff. Like, that is the complexity, I think, is what makes them tough. It's not the talent necessarily, because I've played in plenty of games where game plan, first half, defense, we're destroying them. Then we go in and we're like, all right, let's keep up a lot of the same stuff we're doing. It's working. Let's keep it going. Then the offense comes out in the second half and they're like, all right, y'all are majoring in 4 and 6. All right, we're going to go bring out all our 4 and 6 beaters. Y'all not blitzing us at all? All right, we'll do 5-man protection. But that's not the way that Belichick works. It's like, all right, we gave you this first half of this stuff, and it crushed you. Second half, we're going to give you totally something different. Then you just wasted your whole halftime installing routes to attack this stuff. We ain't doing that no more. And we're also going to anticipate, because, like, football's not that complicated. I know that if we're going to get a cover 4 a lot, they're going to do some sort of high-low concepts, curl-flat concepts on the outside. All right, we're going to anticipate that that's what you're going to go to. We're going to anticipate that you're going to go to lighter protections because we weren't blitzing. We're going to do all the opposite stuff in the second half. So none of that stuff changes necessarily unless these guys get smart enough to understand that.
And then every now and then he do something like that time against the Ravens. I just can't imagine how frustrating it was.
Oh, yeah.
When he had all the dudes out there pretending to be eligible.
Yep.
Right? Like we got dudes, yep. We got dudes with these square numbers out here being eligible. Wide receivers like, nah, I'm just a decoy this time, baby. I just can't imagine what it had to be like for everybody. It's like when I used to play Madden against my boy Fred, and what he would do before every play is just how you could like individually audible players, make some of them drop, make some. And he would just run through every player before the play. Right. And I had no idea if he knew what all of them were going to do, if they were all going to blitz, if they were all going to fall back, whatever it is. But I'd just be sitting there at the line of scrimmage just like, what am I supposed to do right now?
Yep. I mean, that's the solution in Madden would be hand the ball to Bo Jackson if he ever made it into a Madden. Like that. I think that's the solution. That's what you see when Belichick, I guess, has had trouble is when you just got guys that's just dudes, you know, where the coaching don't matter and you can't stop them. And that's the only solution to that when you were getting outcoached and befuddled by the sheer complexity of the defenses.
Yeah, no, man, this is 2022 going to be something, man. I don't know what we are going to make out of any of what this is, right? Like with New York, Omicron hit just as the weather got terrible. And not even terrible, like blizzard terrible, but it just got really gray and really cold and the rain hit. And like, it was, you know, like lonely Christmas for a whole lot of people, though I see clearly for a bunch of y'all wasn't going to let the threat of any of this stuff slow you down. So they back out there. I'm looking at these numbers on this map and it's just like, ugh, everything is just, ugh. In all of this, they already talking about what the contingency plans might be for the Super Bowl because Los Angeles might not be in a place where they letting everybody come inside. And so then they try to figure out where the other place is that it's going to go. But just so you understand, there will be a Super Bowl. Don't you worry.
Yeah, I mean, basketball is the worst for all of this. I don't know. I remember after that bubble thing, like I was genuinely impressed with how they pulled that off. It's a very difficult thing. Like it wasn't seamless. It was very difficult and impressive. This season, though, man, it is. I think, I mean, it's because they're approaching it like there is no option. And maybe in their view, there is no other option. They're like, nah, these games got to get played.
And it's, hook or crook.
Yeah, it's a damn circus.
Well, I also think that in part, like why you wound up back in this place is there's a parallel to the way that like January 6th was handled in the way that COVID-19 was handled in the beginning that you could really tell in looking back. And it obviously wasn't announced at the time, but a great priority in the early messaging was to stop people from panicking, right? So with January 6th, when you look at the ways that things were reported about what happened on the day of and as it happened, and juxtapose that against what everybody actually seemed to know at the time, right? The decision was made that we can't let on to the world that everything is going haywire. And so with COVID, when we got to the start of this and they were trying to get people to mask and take all of the precautions and everything else, it was, hey, don't kill grandma, right? You know, it's just like, you know, you're going to be fine, but you know, you've got to protect the people otherwise, because he didn't want folks to panic. And people were like, man, my grandma been dead 20 years. I don't care. And then they just got back out in these streets and decided they was going to go out here living. And they've just decided that, like, whatever the risk is like, hey, I'm vaccinated. I'm going to be cool. Man, like, me and Joel were talking about this yesterday. You acting like losing your sense of taste ain't no big deal.
I shouldn't laugh, but, yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm scared of getting this thing. I'm scared of getting this thing because I don't know a ton of people who have the long COVID symptoms, but I know they out there, and I don't want to find out. I don't know what conditions that I might have or what latent genes I got up in here that might mix with COVID and act up. I don't want to find out. Like, well, if I don't have to.
Dominic, I put it like this, man. Like, I feel like I'm an exceptional person in some ways. I feel like you feel like you an exceptional person. Absolutely. In some ways. Like, I agree with you, but I definitely, you know, I want to share that. Dog, this ain't the way I want to be exceptional. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even want to test my ability to do the amazing. I don't want that.
My brother sent me a meme the other day that was just talking about how when you walk past certain people on the street, you just look at him like, man, I whoop his ass. I remember like having those thoughts, just random thoughts. I don't feel like that about COVID. I don't want to find out. I ain't trying to square up in the ring with him. Like, I don't never want to find out. And so many people around me have gotten it, and not family, but like friends have gotten it and beaten it and feel fine. That ain't enough for me. If I end up getting it, then that's whatever. I'm going to be optimistic about it. But just seeing these other people beat it ain't enough for me. I'm still scared.
I want to ask you one last thing before we go. Have you sent Adam Schefter a get well card?
Nope.
Oh, you ain't heard?
Mm-mm.
Okay. It's not COVID.
Oh, okay.
Adam Schefter has torn the meniscus in one of his knees.
Oh, yes. I had heard about that from dancing.
Tell him how. Yeah.
From doing gritty. Yeah.
The gritty. He did the gritty and apparently tore his meniscus as reported by Swagoo Marcus Spears. And that is one of my great fears in life. Yeah. Trying to be funny, trying to be cool, hurting myself in one way or another in the process.
I foretold this. Because you remember when he jumped into Lambo? It was like a Monday night game.
Yes.
He did a Lambo leap way back in the day. And I saw that inability to spring. I remember talking about it. And I was like, that's dangerous. I mean, anytime you try to be explosive and you have not tried to be explosive in a long time, it's dangerous. The sad part is, Gritty ain't even that explosive. Like, that's a real laissez-faire dance from my perspective. It's just, man, just don't got no quad strength or something.
He better than me. I would have never told nobody.
Hell no.
With none of y'all, I wouldn't have told coworkers. I'd have just been wide. I'd been like, man, my knee a little sore. I'd be like, yo, Adam's going on. Nah, man. You know, it'd be a little funny. Ha ha. I just kind of hurt my knee a little bit. Yep. You know?
I never would have told nobody. But he gets it. He going to make more content out of it. It was funny watching him do it. It's funny watching him hurt himself and recovering from it. You think he'd do it again? How did Darren Revelle survive that 20-yard sprint? You remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that he probably had an injury, but he ain't tell nobody.
Yeah, like Michael Smith used to run that, and Rich Eisen doing that 40-yard dash. Like, I actually need to ask Rich about that. Like, how many days it taking to recover from that 40-yard dash?
That's got to hurt, man. If you don't run all year, maybe he was training for it.
So, we once had Joey Galloway on HQ.
Oh, my gosh. And I heard this absurdity.
Yeah, Joey swears he can still run a 4.3, and he says that he wouldn't be able to do anything else for 3 days, but he swore he could still run a 4.3. Now, for a moment, let's discount the question that Dominique had a skepticism about whether or not Joey could actually run the 4.3. But for Joey to run as hard as it would take for him to run what he believed to be a 4.3 is about as hard as it would take for Rich Eisen to run a 6 in the 40-yard dash, which is to say, again, how many days after are you laid up from doing it?
Man, maybe I'm just a hater, but I think 4.3 is really fast. And you're laid up for quite some time. I guarantee, I don't know how old Joey Galloway is, but he is probably amongst the fastest people of his age. But to run a 4.3 would mean you are still amongst the fastest people in the NFL. active. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just also personal insecurity. I trained real hard to get my 4.3, and the day I ran it was the first and the last day that I ran a 4.3. And for Joey Damn Galloway, I know this is not where you wanted this to go, but I can't hear that. I can't hear you bring that up. For him to come up and say, I don't know how, let's assume he was in his 40s.
I mean, he was on Madden 96. He was on Madden 96.
his speed better been a 99 back then because, did he run a 4.2?
He was absurdly fast.
Yeah, I remember.
Right? I tell you this, though. I do love the point that you just made, though. Like, we talk about, oh, that guy runs a 4.3. No, that guy ran a 4.3.
Oh, yeah.
like we are assuming that all these guys, like, the 40-yard dash is the SAT, right? Like, yeah. I said, all those things. Like, you're studying for the standardized test. You can't put no SAT in front of me right now and me give you no guarantee of, like, what kind of score I'm going to get, you know? But if you were a person who locked in studying for the SAT, you was ready for that. And that's the 40 for a whole. Like, I'd love to know who the guys are that ran a 4.3 but really are, like, 4.5.
Man. I'm sorry, I got distracted again because I put into Google what was Joey's 40 time, and the first result that came up was 4.18. Joey must know Sergey. He is out here tweaking this algorithm. That man ran a 4.18? That's no nuts. Way. No way.
I'm sure that's hand timed or something like that.
It's hand timed 38 yards. I'm sorry, Joey. You probably did run a 4.18. That's outrageous.
Oh, and on that note, ladies and gentlemen, that is Dominique Fosberg. Check him out. Get Up, First Take, Debatable, and of course, every Friday here on The Right Time. His eyes are out of his head.
4.18.
How Joey Galloway ran a 4.18.
I'm not trying to figure it out. It was 38 yards. It was downhill, and his uncle was holding the clock. That's how he ran a 4.18.
That might be hating. Maybe. Just throwing it out there. But hey.
Oh, no. I fully accept that I'm hating because, like I mentioned, there was so much training and praying that went into my 4.3. The idea that somebody ran a 4.18, I hate that, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassan and Dave Presley handing things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.